What's in danger is your fascination with knowing something and believing something that's not only not true, but can't be true.
Yeah.
You continue to try to make it true.
Yeah.
And so that momentum of thought has to be stopped and reversed. It's like any, you know, a fascination in your mind. It has to be seen, caught, but that's not enough. It's not enough to see that what you're doing is not helpful or loving or sustainable. That's not enough. It has to be reversed. It has to be undone. It has to be let go. Because in this particular scenario, it's being fueled by your devotion to it. You've forgotten purposely how this illusion of being in a body in time and space came about. And you have a self that you no longer know, and it doesn't have your name, but this self has purposefully put you, first it made you as a character, and put you in a scenario surrounded by evidence that materiality is the truth. And it has cut you off from awareness of your spiritual being. It says, try this. Try a material, a slowed down energy so much so that it can become this into something that looks like this now. Has purpose, meaning, this now. These material objects have become a fascination. And what you see in the mirror, ultimate fascination. Even has cycles of experience. For example, you can think something and then you have circuitry in your brain that will evoke from your collection of memories, feelings. You will have feelings that will come about and wash in like air through an open window. Feelings from something you perceived in the material world. The feelings will come in like air through a window and it will chill you or warm you. But that's not all. And neither is it enough to satisfy the reason you came here. What follows next? Emotions. Emotions pop in. After the wind blows in and either warms you or cools you with what you saw or what you heard or what you remembered or what you imagined, you had feelings come up. And the feelings led, if you followed them, to emotions. And the emotion caused an experience that was either light or dark. And it had flavor, and maybe it had action. And the emotions now seem to be proving that the thoughts that started it all were true. So you see, you are insulated now by a circle of your thoughts, feelings, emotions, beliefs, trust, thoughts, feelings, emotions, and a circle. Self-contained, a self-fulfilling prophecy. This is what you have made. It's not a mistake. It's not a sin. However, the identity of being that character is not true. And that's what we're here to save you from. And you can come back and visit and recreate and do this as many times as you already have, many times. And you can do it again. But now, for those of you who are in a spiritual awakening path, and you know it, and you are, this is time to be reborn. You're being reborn to what you really are, And it does require a death of what you are not. Not death of the body. That would be silly. If that was required, the body would be real somehow. See? So it's definitely not death of the body. That also means that death of the body is no guarantee you'll wake up enlightened, spiritually free. Of course not. The body is a fixation and a fascination and a huge investment. It's an investment. Yeah. Let me turn off all the noises on my watch.
Andrew, could you do that circle again and make a distinction between feelings and emotions?
Yes. Everything happens in the mind. The mind has an idea or a perception. You see? Requires the mind to take an idea or a concept and then choose to either just blow it off or to keep it. If it keeps it, it might take the idea and go one step higher around the circle, and the idea becomes a belief. Do you see how ideas and beliefs are different? An idea is an awareness. A belief is starting to become attached and starting to give meaning or importance to the idea. Now it's you're starting to internalize. You're starting to do more than perceive. You're starting to judge and to give meaning. So the idea has become a belief. You know what? I think that's true, what he said. I think that's true. I've never done it, but I think it's true. You see, it's just a belief, much more than an idea. Then, as you integrate it or embody the belief into your being, it takes another step. It goes another step. And the belief you will then take when, well, I'll take you on this path. So once you have your belief that something is happening, is real, as you've assigned meaning to it and reality to it, it will evoke a feeling in you. It's only a feeling. The feeling comes from the pathways in your mind of meaning. That's because you're educated and experienced. You're an adult. And you know, a gun, for example, when you see a gun on a table, a gun laying on a table, it will evoke thoughts. You know, it's an idea. The ideas probably very quickly go to your beliefs, what a gun is. Yes, Cecily.
So in some of the lessons, it says like, you know, our thoughts do not mean anything, or we are not upset for the reason we think we are. We're upset because we think the world is meaningless.
It's like the first 10 lessons. Yeah.
Right, right.
And nothing I see means anything. Yeah, you bet.
And so anyway, I mean, I've thought a lot about this idea that we basically assign the meaning to everything, right?
Right.
Through just what you're saying, like we have thoughts and we adapt some of them as beliefs and start judging and giving meaning. And so we create the world we see, right? By giving it meaning and assigning it value. But what I still don't understand is like, if we step away from assigning value and meaning to what we see and to these experiences and thoughts and stop crafting this world, like then what is there? Is there meaning, or is it only the meaning we assign to it?
See, this is where your awakening is pointed to your awakening identity. The dream does not end. It still goes on. Your values and your meanings are for a character called Cecily Ruttenberg. And Cecily is invested more or less in the whole list. You don't really care much about my car, but you care more about your car. and there's, and you do have thoughts about my car, and you probably don't have many feelings. You do know me, so you might have a little feeling about my car, but it will never evoke an emotion in you. You following, Don? I'm finishing here with you.
Yeah.
It's, but with your car, you have thoughts about your car, feelings, value, which evokes the informs the feelings, and then you even have emotions about your car. Something happens to your car, you could mean tears or laughter, right? So what we're doing here, though, those are all on the same level, Cecily. All on the same level. All the thoughts, feelings, emotions about material objects you can see, that you can hear, that you can even think of. These are all on the same level, the material level. With A Course in Miracles and your spiritual awakening, we're awakening in you. Keyword now, it's a short word. It goes by so quick. I'm going to say it slowly. Identity. Identity. The I am must be awoken to be a spiritual locus, not a material locus. You see, this is the work we're actually doing. We do have to work. Now, once you, I see your hand, Jacqueline, thank you. Once you can awaken, even for only a moment, to the spiritual identity, the world of material values, meaning, all of that, is now shifted. Now you can see that what you see is meaningless. Lesson number one. Number two, everything you see, the meaning, you give it the meaning. It does not give meaning to you. You give it meaning. You start to see that. Why? The only way you can is you have a holy instant in your life where your perspective, keyword now, perspective, which is very much part of perception, shifts to a spiritual identity, even for a moment. Your physical identity is left behind. And now when you say above the battleground in chapter 18, this makes all the spiritual sense that you would ever need. But that brief shift allows you to understand A Course in Miracles. That's why I say this is a radical course. That's why this book is not more popular than it is. You really have to own, even for a moment, another identity. But the book is built to make you fall into that awareness, even for an instant. Jacqueline, what do you got?
Well, I was just thinking about the feeling and emotion. I'm thinking maybe the feeling is, I see a gun, I would personally feel negative. I would have a negative response. And yeah. If I love my car, I get a new car, I have a positive experience. Then the emotion is fear or love, or the emotion is more, comes out like that, right? Where the feeling is either positive, negative, I would think. Is that what you're saying?
That's correct.
You have a feeling?
That's correct. You have a feeling. There is no neutral. And if you give the feeling importance and value, and you start to imagine consequences, it will go to emotion. You act out. Laugh, cry, yell. Yes, Luann.
I'm experiencing a wave of that. I told my grandson he could use my car to travel to work because it was so much cheaper than his truck.
Yeah.
And I've been without it now for a week, and I keep imagining all kinds of awful things happening to it.
Here we go.
And of course, then I feel like, what the hell am I going to do when I can't have a car ever?
Here we go.
And I don't know how to drive his truck yet. It's huge. And I'm thinking, my life is over because I don't have this car.
There we go. Thank you. Thank you, Luann. Perfect example, naturally. It's representing your freedom. You are imagining now. You're taking your feelings and using judgment and perception and from, keyword now, perspective of Luann the body. Luann the comfortable, free body. It can move around on her own. And somehow you
say, at least I'm helping my grandson.
Yeah, you could tell you have a story to smooth that out, but it better to hand this over to the Holy Spirit in you.
Yeah.
And look at the car and look at your happiness now. We always have to go back to what is this for? What is this thought for? What is this meeting for? What are you carrying your book around for on your bookshelf? Why? Because that blue book on your shelf, whether you read it or not, you know that that stands for your peace of mind, don't you? Even if you don't read it, that's why you keep it. That's why you're in this meeting. Because if you take this pill, you take this blue pill, that's your book.
Black.
Huh?
It's black.
Yours is black?
Mine is black. The one you sent me is black.
You put a cover on it?
No.
Yeah.
If I okay, did, well, I'd put a blue one, yeah.
Okay, well, you got a rare book. Hang on to that someday on eBay. That'll be priceless. All the other course rare books are blue.
I had six of them you sent to me, but I've given them to my family.
And so now you have the ability to shift your experience, the meaning and the value, which would force you into emotions that would be usually in the hands of the ego. They're loss. They're some type of threat or temporary pleasure that is just so fragile. What if I lose this? What if it goes wrong? And then what all I have? Like the car now, the car. The meanings and the perspective of what the car will either give you or take from you. This is a bunch of layers of values and meaning that have to be invented. None of those, as you, I'm sure you're aware, none of those are laws or reality. Yes, yeah, Cecily.
So, I know you've talked some in the past about the difference between like the course and Buddhism, because I feel like Buddhism might say like, you know, yes, like our minds tend to think like, what am I going to get from this? Or what am I going to lose from this? Like very binary in every experience. And that's very true. And then like the Buddhist like teachings would be just like, it just like is. Like it just is. And so where does the course fall into that kind of like analysis or whatever?
You bet. And those first lessons that you were mentioning are very much like Buddhism, Zen Buddhism, and awakening to the isness and not the attachment to an outcome or in the world. It recognizes clearly, Buddhism does, just the isness is the only truth of any object or situation that you're perceiving, not what it means, not an outcome. And those would all be stories you would add to it and thereby judge it and thereby not being honest. You would not have the right thoughts. You would not have the right emotions about it. You know, the Eightfold Path is trying to reconcile all the ways that you can address something in the material world so that you don't have ego responses, which are selfish in nature. And that's the value of Buddhism, which we cover in A Course in Miracles in those early lessons. That's not enough for your spiritual awakening. It is enough to quiet down your monkey mind that is so busy in attack and defense. And, the car. Buddhism could help you very much with taking a middle way on the car. However, you can be left with Buddhism without the big picture. There's no God in Buddhism. There's no love in Buddhism, but maybe you know that already. Yeah. 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 It leads you there. It leads you right to compassion, which is great entrance into awareness of love. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Just for kicks, because we mentioned it, turn to page 388. We haven't been there in a long time. And
what page?
This is page 388 in the text. And, you know, this is a pithy couple of paragraphs we'll just touch on to illustrate to you what we're doing with our Course in Miracles work. It's really quite different from, you know, other spiritual paths, but it's quite in common also with the essence of any spiritual path. Well, they're all trying to accomplish is to get your ego to go quiet. And you become aware of something that is eternally true. What a challenge is that? I mean, that's an impossible journey, really. Masonry and this ever works. It's the best path I've seen, though, to get this. And also, beware. Course in Miracles, any spiritual journey, but Course in Miracles certainly is included. It's amazingly personal. Nobody can do this for you. There aren't magic words or a paragraph in here that will pop you into awareness of your truth. This just gives you an opportunity to go through the door. But the door is in your mind, and the steps are taken by you, by your personal choice. So also is the empowerment, though. And it'll mention that in this section. So maybe we'll read one extra paragraph in here because it's quite appropriate to show you that when you do commit to this opening of your mind to a spiritual existence, which means you have to deny your habitual mind for material satisfaction, even just for a moment, that opens this eye. One you can't see. One the body has no use for. This is what vision is. Your awareness of the true nature of things rather than the perceived nature of things. Let's read a couple of paragraphs to see how Jesus puts it. It's brilliant. I mean,
Andrew, what did you say? It moves you from
material sight, material values, material devotion, material reliance, material addiction, material comfort, material protection. I could go on, but you got the idea.
Yes.
Hey, if you want to live a great life in your body, you should start investing in the material, healthy, wealthy, wise, good friends who are generous. That's the way to, you know, get smooth skin, get the right oil, eat the right foods. You know, this is a way to live really happy body for as long as you can. Get a good night's sleep. That's a dead end when it comes to your true love that touches the word eternity. Everything here is framed in time, see? It as good as it is, it all rots. It's designed to. I mean, by its own nature. It's a short sentence in the middle of the book. I mean, there's tons of these things right there, just little gifts when you're ready to read them. Jesus is just dropping a comment on the ego. Ego, also the world that you live in, right? Here's a short sentence. It happens to be an iambic pentameter. Its very nature is that it is not. Then he goes on for another 500 pages trying to explain, you know, everything he's doing to help you. But there it is in one single little sentence. Drops the truth.
What is that, Andrew? The pentameter? What's it called?
Iambic pentameter. That's one of these crazy things about A Course in Miracles. Does everybody know what iambic pentameter is? So Shakespeare wrote with a certain cadence in his writing, his sonnets, and he would have five. It's a kind of a diphthong thing, a long syllable followed by a short syllable followed by a long, short, five times in a row. Iamb is the long, short. Pentameter is a meter, a measure of five. iambic pentameter. Its very nature is that it is not. See? Two fives. Counts out to 10. So many sentences in this book will count out to 10, 15, not 12, not 9, 60% of the book. After you get past chapter 9 and all of part 2 of the workbook. I think it's nearly 100% of part 2 of the workbook, with a few exceptions. This book counts out. Count it when you're doing your lessons past 200. Just count out the syllables. Anyway, you get the idea.
What page is that?
Any page you want.
No. Yeah. I mean this quote that you just gave us.
Oh, I don't have that memorized. Sorry.
Okay.
I could look it up.
That's okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, but it's a great little pithy, short sentence. But iambic pentameter is interesting, you know, because when I was young in the course and I found out about this, it helped me. I kind of rejected the idea that this came through some woman hearing voices immediately. You know, I was kind of the type A engineering type, fresh out of college, you know, a couple of years from being out of college. And I thought, you know, science, math, and this is what's true. Of course, that went away after reading just a few pages. I instantly awoke to this is, I'm in. I don't care where it came from. But the iambic pentameter, for Shakespeare to write in this verse, he had to make up words. Thou'st, wilt'st. Shakespeare made those words up so his sentences would count out right. Jesus didn't write a sonnet with 127 words. He wrote a book with 500,000 and hundreds of thousands. This is an iambic pentameter. I can't even write one sentence in 30 minutes that makes sense. And he wrote thousands of them. I just went, oh, okay, there's way more going on here than meets the eye. Is that satisfying, Cecily? Okay.
I have a question on that. And then the function of that, is there something that is evoked from that beautiful rhythm?
Helen and Bill were doing dictation, and they both started to feel the rhythm and moved. And if you read this out loud and you just don't try to understand it, just read it out loud. Yes, you will get sort of a song, a familiarity and a purpose, it stirs you with its melody. So yes, but personally, it moved me way more that Jesus was having, you know, his ability working with Helen. Helen was a dedicated Shakespeare person.
No.
And she didn't even know this iambic pentameter thing was going on until Bill said, you know, this is kind of poetic. And then after they already done so much dictation, they started looking back and counting out and going, oh my God. So, you know, to me, for scientific minds, and if you've ever tried to write a sentence in iambic pentameter without making up words that make sense, maximum respect. And then to have it be as not only as coherent, but as deeply informative as these sentences are. As you know from our meetings, we'll go so deep into one sentence that happens to be written in iambic pentameter and still makes sense. It has different levels of meaning on your spiritual path. I mean, I get maximum respect for the author going on here in this once engineering mind that would reject anything that, you know, wasn't scientifically peer reviewed and respected by, you know, people smarter than me. Oh my God, I just had to roll over. I started reading it with a completely open mind and heart. I couldn't believe it. Well, that's the effect it had on me. Tim, what effect did it have on you, the iambic pentameter, if you knew about it?
Well, I did, and I've heard stories. Maybe it was from Ken Wapnick, so you can put, you know, your experience of
what the truth might be, but that Helen's not writing in iambic pentameter so much in the early part of the book was can be compared to rusty pipes. You open up a not used tap and the water at first comes out rust colored and you let it run and eventually it clears up. And so the first chapters where there's a lot of material that was filtered out of the final cut on the book that is present in what you were talking about, you know, last time.
Yeah.
That diminishes sharply as you get into chapter 8 and 9, and the iambic pentameter picks way up.
Yeah.
Iambic pentameter is verse that's easier to remember. You hang on to it. Like, but soft, what light through yonder window breaks? Okay, Romeo and Juliet. Or to be or not to be, that is the question. You can screw around a little bit, the emphasis moves. But what it did for me was, like you, it's like, this is impossible. One of the biggest problems I had with the course was I wasn't willing to suspend my sense of what the source could be. I can't see it. I can't put it in the test tube. I can't swirl it around. Forget about it. You know, they're all going to laugh at me, and I'm going to laugh at myself. So I turned up, spent a long time with my BS-o-meter turned up to 11 as I went through this material. And then just finally, I wore down. I couldn't find a single flaw with it that didn't resolve itself with, you know, approaching a teacher and or reading it and asking for help.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's I'm like you. I had the engineer's mind. I had the scientific mind. Mm-hmm. And I looked at this and I said, who can do all of that just, you know, flowing out even just in a couple of years. So finally, I suspend my sense of needing to know the technical answers to how the channeling took place and instead say, what's in front of my nose on this paper?
Yep.
And am I going to benefit if I continue to read and study it? The answer is certainly yes.
Yep. And it began to blow away my other spiritual books that I was reading.
Right. You know, and you know I'm a big Buddhism studier and Christian. Christianity before that is also runs through me up deep. And this is the shortest, most energy-dense way to get to the goal, which is the peace of God, right?
Yeah.
Escaping. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, does Buddhism take you there? Sure. Does Christianity take you there? It can. Do other paths take you there? Yeah. Does the Course acknowledge all of that? It does. It says this is for some people, it's not for everybody, but here you are, it's meant for you.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I go, all right, in Buddhism, the fastest path is called a tantric path. It goes one lifetime. This is even maybe faster than that.
It has a day-by-day workbook, a day-by-day hold you by the hand guru who will tell you, hey, follow these particular steps each day, say this so many times an hour, and we will wash the ego out of your mind if you're willing. I'm like, wow. But Buddhism didn't give me that. No. I guess you could have joined a monastery and maybe they've got that going on there. But man, this just took me by the hand and worked with my individual thoughts and fears and beliefs.
There are very few Buddhists. They're basically high level practitioners, like you said, for monastery, really good teachers, a lifetime or half a lifetime of study, who approach, you know, the level one understandings in this book.
Yeah. What do you got, Ross?
So I did one more thing: is put the book down and went and listened to and studied with, you know, a dozen or more different teachers, and they all agreed with the course. So there's my verification.
That's what I did. Yeah, I had a girlfriend who was
any of it.
Yeah, I had a girlfriend that wanted to go see all these teachers at the time I was studying Course in Miracles, and of course I went along and I thought, oh wow, that's lesson 132. Oh, yeah. That's covered in lesson 18. Well, you know, so yeah, same experience, Ross. Great, thank you for that. Yeah. I mean, my God, what's in this book? Lined up, organized. Yeah, well, I'm singing to the choir here. Turn to page 388. And Jacqueline, I got your mute. When you get there, would you start reading? Let's just read the first four paragraphs of I Need Do Nothing. as kind of a reminder of what are we doing? What is this? What does this accomplish with our mind?
I need do nothing. You still have too much faith in the body as a source of strength. What plans do you make that do not involve its comfort or protection or enjoyment in some way? This makes the body an end and not a means in your interpretation. And this always means you still find sin attractive.
Sin and separation.
No, mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, okay, gotcha.
Yeah, it's good. Well done, Jacqueline. I just want to focus on.
Yeah. No one accepts atonement for himself who still accepts sin as his goal, separation as his goal. Mm-hmm. You have thus not met your one responsibility. Atonement is not welcomed by those who prefer pain and destruction.
There's a quick summary on Jesus' perspective on what you are doing in your addiction with the body. And that's, so, you know, he calls out the evidence of your progress. You still have, sentence one, too much faith in the body as what? A source of strength, security, happiness, longevity, comfort. What plans do you make that do not involve its comfort or protection, enjoyment in some way? Busted. You're busy all day long providing for the body. And in relationship, it's the same thing. How can these two bodies cooperate comfortably and get enough time for what they, he wants, I want, and let's make some compromises? Yes, Jacqueline.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, I think about this a lot now because every day I do have to, you know, you bathe the body, you feed the body, you do all these things. You're hopefully doing your exercise. So it does, and I have a little dog. I'm taking care of her body too, and people have their children. So, you know, I just try to imagine. I mean, I know that my awareness can become greater and greater of my spiritual, you know, that I'm spirit, but I still will be doing all these things for the body. You know, I think, oh, it'd be nice if I have to do all these things for the body, but that's not going to work. So,
and it won't happen either.
No, I know. So I know it's a communication, you know, we can use it for communication. Anyway, I just noticed that I noticed that a lot. My
good.
Gosh.
Good.
Body.
That's right. Yeah. And you have to, that's what Cecily mentioned earlier too. It's like, wow, you know, what about all these values that are obviously part of living in my life? How can I have this, you know, let's call it an airy-fairy spiritual existence that's not connected to reality? And how's that going to feed my kids or get gas in the car or help me keep my job so I can have a home and a good night's sleep or do my charity work and help other people? How is this airy-fairy spiritual existence that doesn't seem to care about material existence going to, see? That's going, that's not understanding the, really is a parallel path that you must take. And the key is, I'm going to say it again, I'll say it slowly, identity, not occupation. We don't talk about this much. This actual section here touches on it a little bit, but the spiritual work that you're doing, it does not actually take time. Letting go of your ego addiction does take time, and that is what you end up practicing with your practice. You are practicing with your Course in Miracles work, not spirituality. You are not practicing spirituality. You are uncovering spirituality, and that takes work. When this section says, I need do nothing, it means your ego needs to stop occupying all your busyness and your values. You need your ego to do nothing. You need your Holy Spirit to reinterpret what you are doing, and you need to start doing that immediately. That's what we're going to read in this section if we decide to go that far. So, identity. And then the dog is absolutely Leela, to use another one of these Eastern terms, play, enjoyment, even when the dog dies, it's Leela. If your mind is straight, and your children, and your job, and your house, and difficult things in relationship with the car, and you know, all this must evoke the emotions of loss if only the ego is informing you. But if you can switch your identity to a spiritual perspective, you get above the battleground. And this is what your spiritual awakening is. It has a ignition effect because you feel free, even though difficult things are happening. Let me tell you, this is where you want to go. This is where you're going. The fear drops away. A trust is born in the bigger picture, and it, and enjoyment. In other words, joy gets involved and grows because of your spiritual perspective. This is what you're doing. You're freeing yourself from your ego addiction. You need do nothing right away. Get started with your ego and get the Holy Spirit perspective, identity reawoken. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, Luann, what do you got?
Last night, my body completely gave up, did some things that were just awful. And I was thinking in the middle of all this mess, I kind of wish I didn't have this body. Is there any other way I could live a life?
Right?
Yeah.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. That's, of course, that's happened. All of us have had uncomfortable times.
I think if we add them up during a day, mm-hmm. we're not much happy with our body most of the time.
Even the most successful of us on the planet.
Yeah.
Yeah, you bet. You bet. But this is a, you know, this is a proving ground for a very ambitious use of creative power. And we're busy doing that now that we've gone too far. And we've shifted our identity from creator to creature. From dreamer to the dreamed, to a character in our own dream. This can be healed, and it must, in order for you to return to the creative power. You lost your creative power in this fixation. You've taken a part of your mind and invested in separation. That's what we're here to wake up. Wake up from that. With the same mind, see? If you can do that, then you can now bring your light, which is in chapter 14, you can now bring your light into this world. You wake up now and light becomes more real for you than darkness. Life becomes more real than death, you see, by death being seen as the dream that it is, and life being seen as the eternal movement of mind that it is. It would take miracles to do that, but that's what we're doing. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's kind of encoded here in this section. It's so many levels. So let's read a few more paragraphs. Here we go. We didn't even finish this first. Did we finish the first paragraph, Jacqueline?
We haven't finished the second one.
We did finish the first.
Thank you. Okay. So now let's have Luann read paragraph 2.
Reality needs no cooperation.
Wait, it's paragraph 2 will start with the words, there is one thing.
456. There is one thing that you have never done. You have not utterly forgotten the body. It has perhaps faded at times from your sight, but it has not yet completely disappeared. You are not asked to let this happen for more than an instant. Yet it is in this instant that the miracle of atonement happens.
See, that's what I'm trying to say for Cecily, if she's still there, that it's just an instant. It's not abandoning your family. It's not quitting your job. It's not going into a cave. However, it does take a true instant of awakening. The holy instant is not a holy hour. It's not a holy minute even, because it's not necessary for you to have time be the proving ground for holiness. for your spiritual nature does not need time as a weight or a convincing factor. Do you see the spiritual awakening is complete in the instant that it is? It wipes out all of time for a moment. That's why the power of now is so powerful, because this is a recognition of timelessness, meaning there is no time. Just for an instant, it won't make sense to your ego. You try to teach it or explain it in the next minute, it'll sound like gobbledygook. But nobody can take away the experience of peace that flushed over you, like the warm air coming through an open window. Okay, please continue.
After this instant, you will see the body again, but never quite the same. And every instant that you spend without awareness of it gives you a different view of it when you return.
There's the power of doing the lessons. There's a power of having your mind opened to the perspective of your spiritual keyword, identity. Now, when you go back and do your body work, you go back in your life and you earn your money and you work with your diseases and you work with your health and your wealth and your wisdom, it comes with a different perspective. Therefore, it comes with a different value. Therefore, it comes with a different possible judgments. You see? Because your identity has been awoken beyond the body.
I was certainly thankful when I realized, well, I was thinking that during last night.
Yes. I know you could rescue yourself because you have enough years with Course. Yeah, that's it. You do. You shift out of those moments by getting present. Same for you, Dawn. That's going to be your challenge, is to more quickly step into a present moment and find the freedom there when you are burdened with your depression. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, this is a little story from today, a little vignette.
Okay.
So I went to get a haircut with a guy I hadn't seen for 3.5 years. In the interim, a lot's happened with him. You know, his partner died January 3 years ago. He and three sisters are nursing their 93-year-old father. Lots of family drama and craps coming down. And I was there practicing, you know, practicing my work and being there. And I wanted to be open to him and just, so he is talking nonstop. And I'm starting to get anxious, you know, uncomfortable.
Yep.
And I had the grace to invite stepping back. And I stepped back, in essence, invited Holy Spirit in. And nothing happened right away. I didn't hear the big voice, you know, do this or say this or anything. But just gradually, all of a sudden, I just had this sense of peace and happiness and joy in listening to this man's troubles, you know?
Yes.
And so it was very encouraging to me. Oh, I really can step away.
Wow.
And probably making it because it wasn't my little box alone in my home and it's all about me and all this made it in a sense easier. It was like,
yes. Yes.
But it was a nice.
I want to point out that Don used the absolute perfect word when he described his bridge experience going from the uncomfortable feeling into welcoming the Holy Spirit part of his mind. Do you remember what word he used? He used grace.
Right. Oh, yeah.
That is the perfect use of that word according to Course in Miracles. And Don, you absolutely illustrated it.
Yeah.
Grace means that you allow for truth to be present at any time.
Yeah.
And that's what you did. You said, let me just go to the truth instead. And compassion opened, and you used vision instead of the ego's analysis of how terrible this is and it could happen to you. You could be next. I mean, you listen to somebody's troubles. Eventually, you start to see disaster, and then you start to feel disaster, and then you start to have an emotion, like we started that. Of course, but if you short-circuit that, go to grace, have the Holy Spirit open this eye, your spiritual eye instead of your ears and your sight. Then the compassion comes in from the bigger picture and you see life happening. You see now the face of Christ calling for love instead of bleeding all over the place with sorrow.
Yeah.
Beautiful, Don. Bravo. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. So I will say, you know, part of the encouragement was that it was by grace that it occurred to me to step away. It was like, oh, thank God it's there. God is there.
Yes.
You know, the Spirit is
you,
there.
Don, needed to do nothing for a moment.
I did nothing. That's true.
You absolutely did nothing for a moment.
I got it.
And look what happened.
That's where the joy is.
Makes you wonder if you hadn't been taking this course, if the guy would have talked to you like that. You might have known you could do that for him.
Yeah, yeah. And not have to know what was happening, and not have to see anything happen necessarily. You know, to not have some sage advice or some sage whatever.
That's it, buddy. That's it. Just do nothing and be available. And so, you know what happens is at the back of the book in the manual for teachers, that talks about a teacher of God. And in that moment, you were a teacher of God. Why? Because you opened your mind with these 10 attributes that he lines up in a row. You suddenly went to trust that there's a bigger picture here. You went to honesty. Which is your willingness to sit there and share this moment with this person. You didn't walk away. Mm-hmm. You went to tolerance. You allowed him to do his thing and say what he was saying, even though some of it you knew was right or could have been modified. You just tolerated what this person was going through. And that's what allowed you to have the joy of compassion in that moment, by the way, FYI. Beautiful little three paragraphs in the back of the book on tolerance. It's so informative.
Okay.
Gentleness. You did not try to correct him. You felt the joy and you told us you did.
Yeah, I did.
And that's because in your tolerance and trust and honesty in that moment with this person, that you had the ability to be joyful and defenseless, both for him and for you. And so love was starting to show up. And you're not following what the ego does in those situations.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is what the teacher of God's job is to do, is to become now the light of love. When that short little lesson says the light has come. The light has come, Don. That's what it feels like.
Coming.
Good job. Beautiful. Thank you for celebrating and sharing that with us. That was beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you. And thank you all.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Luann, I think you need to finish that paragraph. Who was reading it?
I think the last sentence is the only one left.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've been beginning with, after you will see the body again, but never quite the same. And then, and every instant that you spend without awareness of it gives you a different view of it when you return.
There's a complete prediction of what you get with your Course in Miracles work. What to do? If you can pull it off, what to expect? Look at sentence 4. Afterwards, you will see the body again. Remember Buddhism, chop wood, carry water? That's what you do before you do Buddhism. Then after you get your awakening, you chop wood and you carry water. It's not denying the physical world, but you're awakening now to your Buddha nature, to your Christ mind. This allows you to do it without fear, without attack, without anger, without guilt, without revenge. Those are all the things that spoil your life. Jacqueline, what do you got?
Well, I think in this whole thing, what I'm, you know, after what I shared, what I'm hearing is, no, I can't even think what I was going to say, but it's more like experiencing or allowing spirit or knowing spirit isn't involved in time. So taking care of the body, chopping wood, all that involves time, but the awareness that we are doesn't take any time. And so if that's happening in the present, it's hard to express. I just had a sense of it.
When you chop wood and the axe slips off the wood and hits the ground and chips on a rock, before it was the loss and foolish, unskillful use of an axe. After enlightenment, it's just chopping wood. Axes don't always hit the bright spot. You would need a whole bunch of judgment and attachment to the axe hitting perfectly and being skillful with an axe.
And your body isn't probably what it's supposed to do either.
So that's, that's the translation. It's occurring now in the moment. There's no attachment to the how it looks or should have been or could have been. Now you're free to chop wood swinging the axe, come what may. Cecily.
Thank you.
We get so many messages that the body is like so important, right? How it looks, what it does, everything is marketed to us around our body. There's just so much emphasis on the body. It's like our most prized asset that we possess, and seems to hold our value and our meaning and our worth and our everything. So to forget about our body, what does it say? To forget about our body is like a crazy concept.
Yeah, who's going to do it? That's crazy. You would need a miracle. Seriously. No kidding here. You'd need a miracle to be able to forget about your body and still exist. You're absolutely right. The payoff is freedom. The payoff is being able to swing an axe that goes right off the stump into a rock. And it does not evoke any emotion. The feelings are not negative. They're free. That's the payoff. And your axes are going to miss the stump going forward. Some are going to hit. Some are going to miss.
Or like Loanne said, these bodies are all going to deteriorate and die. Yeah. That's just the truth of the matter.
Yes. Yes. How much better to do that with grace, Dawn. Thank you for beautiful illustration of that word. Rather than with attack, defense, worry, fear, and a sense of shrinking rather than growing. Wouldn't you rather grow as your body deteriorates, since you know all growth is in the mind and your mind is available? As you know, regardless of what is happening on the outside, you bet. This is what healing is. This is why the word atonement here is so important. Can we read atonement in that paragraph? We sure did. Same paragraphs, previous sentence. Sentence 3, you are not asked to let this happen for more than an instant, comma. Yet in this instant that the miracle of, it's in this instant the miracle of atonement happens. Where you awaken to alignment with oneness, where you step out of the body, you have a momentary awareness that you exist beyond your own body. This momentary existence wipes out time, wipes out age, wipes out loss of any type, including death. That's why it's a holy instant. That's what atonement is reconciliation of your eternal mind with your external witnessing. Yeah. Yeah. Let's read another paragraph while we're here. Deborah, I got your mute. Give us paragraph 3.
At no single instant does the body exist at all. It is always remembered or anticipated, but never experienced just now. Only its past and future make it seem real. Time controls it entirely, for sin is never wholly in the present.
Want to stop there for a second?
Yeah.
We should probably, I'm going to have you start over after I say a few words about this so we can hear what you just said again. Jesus is just commenting very factually. These are facts. This is not a stretch, but then if you look into science a little bit, you find out that we don't even witness the present moment. Your body, your ego, your brain, watch now, your brain does not witness the present moment. Your signals of your life, even if you're, when you're walking, if you're an average 6 foot tall person, the signal takes up to 200 milliseconds to get to the brain about the movement and the pressure on your foot. That's a fifth of a second. It's real time. Your eyes are quicker than the transduction through the nerves and through your spine to your brain. So what happens is you live slightly shifted in the past. Looking for the past, you slightly shift. The perception is ignored from the brain. The eyes are delayed for a moment, and it's married up with the feeling from the foot, so you think you feel instantaneously what you see. You do not. Your consciousness lives approximately 80 milliseconds at all times shifted. It's amazing what we've accomplished with time and space in these bodies. Tim, what do you got?
Yeah, not only that, but awareness, although it appears to be a smooth continuum for most of us most of the time, is actually composed of discrete units, chunks. In physics, we call these quanta, and the word quantum mechanics comes from the discovery that light and radiation and gravity and time and space are, in fact, not smooth. They are discontinuous chunks. There's those chunks are just so tiny that our poor brains have no chance at seeing them as discrete units. But in fact, our very perception is like a ratchet, like that. And it's just like watching a movie film that's going fast enough that you don't see the frame to frame. And instead it looks like something that's, you know, real time and smooth. But consciousness is not.
So when you say it's an illusion, it's starting to be believable. When you say that you see nothing as it is now in lesson 6, I think it is, it's starting to be really practical. At no single instant does the body exist at all. He's calling you out of time for a moment. You need to perceive the body for it to, you need to dream this thing in order for it to be experienced. It takes time, another part of your dream. He's calling out a metaphysical fact of your experience in this particular paragraph. Deborah, please start over and ask any questions as you go along.
At no single instant does the body exist at all. It is always remembered or anticipated, but never experienced just now. This means so much more to me since you stopped and said what you said, Andrew. Right. Only its past and future make it seem real. Time controls it entirely, for sin is never wholly in the present. In any single instant, the attraction of guilt would be experienced as pain and nothing else, and would be avoided. It has no attraction now.
This would be skillful living, to see guilt as pain and nothing more. Not meaning, not prediction, not damnation, just pain. Beautiful. Please continue.
Its whole attraction is imaginary and therefore must be thought of in the past or in the future.
Wow. There's your diagnosis of emotions and where they come from. Wow.
Okay, now it gets in it. Can't have guilt in the present?
You can't have guilt in the present. You can ignore the present and pull guilt from the past or draw it in from what you think it'll do in the future. But in the present, you cannot.
And that's because there's no context for it? Like,
because guilt requires an action. It requires some type of happening, a loss or an engagement in the world, that there be an effect. Do you see? Guilt is not a cause. Guilt is that there would be some problem from an effect happening in the world to your body or to somebody else's rights or body or self-esteem. There's a couple sentences in the workbook.
That's why holy instants are just instants.
That's correct. That's correct. The truth is now. That's where the truth is. It is not in time. Guilt is a respecting any cause and effect relationship where one thing acts on another thing and you're in the world of separation, which is sin.
Luann, you said something really cool just now. The little instant is an event or whatever you want to label it without a unit. It's, you can't label it meters per second or say it took X amount of time to occur or it occupied this amount of space, however briefly. It's an event without a unit. And so, like you said, as you noticed, it doesn't take any time. It doesn't take any space. It occurs, and before you chop wood and carry water, and then afterwards you chop wood and carry water, but it's all different, you know, from you. And then if it happens to you again, you come back and it looks a little different yet again. But that's really cool that you brought that up that way. Thank you for triggering that thought. I'd never had that in that way.
So it's an experience out of time and space.
Exactly.
It's perfect. Not really even... I don't know. I don't want to. I'm just curious because it occurred to me. I was going to say it's an event out of time and space, and then somehow the word event.
Even that's not satisfying.
Yeah, experience was more satisfying.
Yeah, we need.
Nice. See, you're digging into it.
It's an improvement.
It's nice, guys. Nice. You're abandoning the linear logic of trying to explain it. That's beautiful. Quick, everybody. Turn to page 360 in your text. And Deborah, would you read for us only paragraph 11, sentence 1?
Oh, sentence 1. The holy instant is a miniature of heaven. Sent to you from heaven.
And in A Course in Miracles, heaven is a code word for knowledge, for your awakened state. It's a code word. And then, now read us sentence 4 from the same paragraph, please.
I have that underlined. The holy instant is a miniature of eternity.
And then the next sentence.
It is a picture of timelessness set in a frame of time.
There we go. Back to understand, back to your world, back to compassion of Buddhism, back to the compassion that Don had as he watched his dear friend seem to struggle, but really he saw the face of Christ living out this call for love. He saw through it. He saw through the suffering. That's what the holy instant can do. The perspective you get. Light is the other word. It's a code word in A Course in Miracles. Light is a code word for understanding. Heaven is a code word for knowledge. Do you see how they're linked? Do you see their beautiful path now? Your spiritual path is laid before you with just these two words.
Light is a code word for what, did you say?
Understanding. On page 50, short sentence. This world is not left by death, comma, but by understanding. Of course. This world is maintained by not understanding, but by continuing to be a victim. Yeah. Yeah, beautiful. Thank you.
So wait a minute. So understanding and light, heaven and truth, if we could be in that state all the time, would we be in what? Enlightenment? Heaven?
Salvation. It is salvation. The first thing you experience. It is the atonement and salvation.
Okay.
And then you return to creativity.
So atonement, basically.
Atonement, yes. Okay. And then you return to your true nature as a creator, which is actually abstract, but we get to in another discussion if we go that direction. Let's go back to 388 since we're there and pick up some more jewels here. I think, was it Deborah was reading?
Yeah.
Would you read that paragraph? I'll try not to interrupt you.
Read it again?
Yeah, number 3, yes.
At no single instant does the body exist at all. It is always remembered or anticipated, but never experienced just now. Only its past and future make it seem real. Time controls it entirely, for sin is never wholly in the present. In any single instant, the attraction of guilt would be experienced as pain and nothing else, and would be avoided. It has no attraction now. Its whole attraction is imaginary and therefore must be thought of in the past or in the future.
Beautiful paragraph. And then, Tim, would you read for us paragraph 4?
I apologize, Andrew. I've lost the...
Oh, no problem. It's 389. And Cecily, can you read?
Yeah.
Sure.
So, Tim, you'll be ready for the next paragraph. Go ahead, Cecily.
I had a question from 3. Should I wait?
Oh, no. Bring it now.
Okay. So... the idea of like guilt should be experienced just as pain.
Yep.
Is that like the same idea of, you know, like if we have pain, it's just pain, but when we assign meaning to it and give it a story, then it becomes suffering.
Well said.
And so guilt, even if we experience it, it should just be interpreted as like the same as like a physical pain and just like experience it, but don't assign any meaning to it.
It's a natural effect of the body.
Guilt is?
Well, yeah, living in a body in time and space.
It's kind of like the same thing as it's not real.
It has an attraction for the ego. Because guilt can help you determine to do what's right and what's wrong and how not to suffer. Guilt becomes the teacher, like fear. It is so wise to be afraid of the right things and to judge the wrong people who have the wrong politics or aren't vegetarian. I mean, that just tells you, doesn't it, what they're thinking? That's guilt, see? That's guilt.
And so it's saying that these thoughts are normal part of being in a body, but we should interpret them just as like pain?
Yes, they are absolutely painful to some bodies and they're a celebration for other bodies. But for you, some things will be painful and they'll evoke thoughts of guilt, either taking it or giving it. But you see, if you are a body, then you better pay attention because it's going to take your happiness next. If you're not a body, but you're running a body, it does not have to take your happiness. You can just avoid the discomfort. Drop it. It doesn't have meaning. There should be no attachment in the world of meaning. You are not free. If you are a victim of the world and it lives you. Remember, you are living, not the world living you. You are living the world. But only if you can step out of the body identity.
Paragraph 4, please let me read it. 389.
Please do.
This is one of my favorite in the whole book. And it's because I gave myself permission to not have to be a Buddhist monk in the cave till the end of my days.
All right.
Because of this paragraph. Now, it's impossible to accept the holy instant without reservation unless, just for an instant, you're willing to see no past or future. You cannot prepare for it without placing it in the future. Release is given you the instant you desire it. Many have spent a lifetime in preparation and have indeed achieved their instance of success. This course does not attempt to teach more than they learned in time, but it does aim at saving time. You may be attempting to follow what is a very long road to the goal you've accepted. It's extremely difficult to reach atonement by fighting against sin. Oh, God, Christianity, Catholicism. Oh, enormous effort is expended in the attempt to make holy what's hated and despised.
is a lifetime. That would be so funny if we weren't living it.
Yeah. The irony is overwhelming, right? Enormous effort is expended in the attempt to make holy what's hated and despised, nor is a lifetime of contemplation and long periods of meditation aimed at detachment from the body necessary. All such attempts will ultimately exceed because of their purpose, yet the means are tedious and very time-consuming. For all of them look into the future for release from a state of present unworthiness and inadequacy and guilt.
Busted. All these spiritual paths are busted.
Which is so huge for me to find that. And maybe
thank you, Tim. Thank you, Tim. This is a huge release from a bunch of effort with no guarantee. A bunch of denying yourself life, trying to have a spiritual awakening by denying your physical life with no guarantee. That's a sad proposition. Ultimately, it will work because of its goal. But how sad.
Exactly.
Good job, Tim. Good catch. Beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. Cecily, give us number 5. This is beautiful. This is so personal. And he he celebrates with you and joins with you in your devotion in this next paragraph. Please go for it. Five.
Your way will be different, not in purpose, but in means. A holy relationship is a means of saving time. One instant spent together with your brother restores the universe to both of you.
And that word "with" could be an entire section in this book. And it is in chapter 16, 15 and 60. That word "with" is very significant. One instant spent with your brother, not defending or attacking or opposed from your brother, but with your brother. So it's a lot in that one word. Please continue.
You are prepared. Now you need but to remember you need do nothing. I'll read that one again. Now you need but to remember you need do nothing. It would be far more profitable now merely to concentrate on this than to consider what you should do. A good one. When peace comes at last to those who wrestle with temptation and fight against the giving in to sin, when the light comes at last into the mind given to contemplation, or when the goal is finally achieved by anyone, it always comes with just one happy realization. I need do nothing.
Bravo. Yep. That kind of makes it sound achievable, right? And yet, in this section, look at sentence five. Do you need to do nothing and just you're perfect the way you are? Is that your Course in Miracles teaching? No. Down the street, they got classes that are teaching, oh, you're lovely and perfect just the way you are, which is absolutely true if that's what you're understanding, not the level Course teaches. Course knows you're addicted to your ego and your body. So you know what it says? Look at that. Sentence five. Now you need to do something, huh? You need but to remember that you small Y-O-U, not capitalized, you need to do nothing. And the sooner the better. The sooner you come into the present moment and drop the attack you're about to do, the worrying you're about to do, this preoccupation with the past, either taking guilt or giving guilt that you were about to do because of this situation, you need to do nothing in that moment. Just like Don did. Grace was available and the man followed it. And the love showed up in his what's called right-mindedness or right perception of his struggling brother. Beautifully, beautifully, beautifully said. And look what happens. He told us, Don told us. He said that his recognition came with one happy realization that he needed to do nothing. He stepped back and he let the voice for God lead the way in that moment. And look what happened. His awareness came up and he brought light into the room. Remember, light is understanding. It's contagious. If the person he was with was willing to allow the light that Don was shining, you know, I saw it on his face when he was describing it. The whole room gets lit up. He was a teacher of God in that moment. Well, thank you, everybody, for studying Course in Miracles with me. Good ground, and let's do it again next week.
Okay.
Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Bye. See everybody. Bye.